Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Gone. Goodbye. Touchdown, Indy. Woo! IU. America. They got a football team now.
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome aboard. Glad to have you for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio coming to you on this Wednesday, the first day of October. Hope you're having a great start to your day, start to the week. You've made it to the halfway point. It's all downhill from here. Jim Coyle with you as always, Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thanks a lot for joining us, no matter where and how, as you traverse through the day. Keep it locked where you got it on your radio station dial. Whether it's one of our great affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, the ref, always the right call in Evansville. 104.7, 1030 AM. WJOB, or 1230 AM, my bad. And up in the region. And Fort Wayne's only sports station, 1380 The Fan. Hope everything is going well for you. Be safe as you're out there. Another beautiful day coming. Yesterday, Indiana basketball opened up the doors once again. Darren DeVries has been unbelievable in that regard. We'll hear from, try to hear from him later and hear from some of the players as we spoke with them. More importantly, got to see them on the court in an extensive practice that went on for an hour and a half. So this is the third time we've been able to see this team play, or at least some of us that were in Puerto Rico. Actually, it'd be fifth time, including the previous open scrimmage. And more of the same, although just better at it. And I will repeat now what I said in August when I saw them in Puerto Rico. Fans are going to enjoy watching this team. They're going to play defense hard. They're going to shoot the three-point ball. They're going to move the ball fast. They're going to share the ball. You're going to enjoy. It's just going to be a fun season. Where they end up, I don't know. I've been pegging them in the 6 to 10 spots in the Big Ten, but it's difficult because we don't really know how good this team is or is going to be. Nor do we know much about the rest of the Big Ten aside from Purdue and Michigan. Who else is going to pop up? Oh, there are several injuries. Several injuries for you right now. Four of them about. I can't name them all, but but I don't think any of them are serious, but have the guys that were hurt in PR been? Yeah, Nick Dorn played yesterday. I think he was one that was out previously. The freshman from Serbia did not play, but the main players, the one that didn't, I think, was. Was Josh Harris, maybe, that didn't play? But more importantly, who did play? Because they played well. More of the same from Lamar Wilkerson, from Tucker DeVries, Connor Enright, Tayton Conaway, Reed Bailey, and, of course, Trent Sisley, who got the punch. I asked several players whom they might think was the most improved. We look at the football teams, excuse me, as who's the most improved week to week, and we haven't seen them. There you go. Here's coach speaking right now, as a matter of fact.
Junior college players received additional eligibility thanks to court proceedings. Kind of curious what your history with JUCO players is, how often they kind of come through your system, and would you like to see kind of, for you to weigh in, the NCAA take the tech that eligibility for junior players doesn't count toward Division I, doesn't start their clock.
He's asked about junior college players and extended eligibility.
Yeah, to my understanding, that ruling is still a little bit up in the air. I think that was just a one-time ruling. Don't quote me on that. But so most of our guys right now that came from the junior college level are still within their normal framework of eligibility. So, for us, they've been an awesome addition for us just because of the experience they have from the multiple spots they've been, so pretty excited about that. But moving forward, I'm not sure how that's going to play out for all those guys.
Jeff and then Seth.
Yeah, Coach, what do you feel you guys are best at right now, or like what area are you most confident in, and what area do you feel least confident or that needs the most work right now?
Yeah, what I think we're best at right now is just the coachability. Like they've from the first week in June till now, they've continued to just want to learn, want to get better. Like every week, you have good days and bad days, from a practice standpoint, that you feel like you did some things really well, and other days maybe not as well, but that's kind of part of the preseason. But I love how coachable they are. I love, I think, how unselfish that we play. I think even our communication, our connectivity shines through a little bit on not only on the offensive end, but the defensive end. That's starting to really come together as we've gotten further and further through the summer and fall. So I like the progress we've made. I think we have a lot of guys that have shown throughout practice that we have multiple guys that can score the basketball. So you're not just relying on one or two guys every night. I think we have a lot of different ways we can score it, a lot of different guys that can shoot the ball. So I'm excited about that piece. And then defensively, I like how they bring great enthusiasm and energy to the defensive end. So that's something that we have to be really good at to be good on the defensive side, because we're not going to be overly, big and long and athletic. So we got to be very sound in what we do from a discipline standpoint, and then just be very aggressive in the way we approach it.
Seth and then Alex.
Yeah, for you in your first year, leading the program, what would define a successful year for you? What defines success to this group?
Yeah, I think I said this even from our press conference. It's not really about wins and losses. I think the success is coming from, like, are we doing what we feel we need to do every day, from a mindset, from an approach, and are we, getting to where we want them to get to from that standpoint? Everything that we value, whether it be in practice, off the floor, on the floor, are they doing those things? I like what they've done at this point. And I guess I've always been a strong believer in, like, if you can get a group connected enough at all the little things, the discipline things, the toughness things, that you can have a group that can win a lot of games, and that's our goal.
Alex and Zach.
Just curious how you're feeling about the health of your team right now. I noticed there was a couple guys that didn't participate today. Are they in long-term situations, or are you expected to be healthy like when the season starts?
Yeah, it looks like we're investors in boots right now, So, some of them are very short term, some are a little bit longer term. So we have, certainly our practice depth has been cut into immensely here. So it's made some things challenging from a practice standpoint. But we'll have a few of the guys that are getting closer to getting back. One guy out with some sickness today, so that's a minor one. One's out with a sprained ankle. But with these new roster limits and things, there's not a lot you can do to even add to that. So it does make things a little challenging. But we're hopeful that we're getting all this out of the way in the preseason and working our way back to getting healthy.
Zach and Daniel?
Darren, I guess it's really about a player who's been working back toward full health. It seems like Nick Dorn is able to do more and more. I know he missed the summer and you can't replace that time, but what have you seen from him? And maybe how has it matched on film, what the player that you were recruiting to the one that now you maybe you're starting to be able to get to work with a little bit more?
Yeah, I'm a little worried. I've been watching him run on the sidelines that Coach Sig might try and steal him from me, because like he can run, he can move. You've seen him. He's a big physical guy. So as he's working his way back, we haven't had an opportunity to see a lot of the basketball piece. A lot of it's been, you know, shooting, some light movement stuff. But he's certainly getting closer and closer to full health before we get into more of that live contact. So we're excited about him getting back whenever that time comes. But I think he's another added piece that we're looking forward to seeing what he can do.
Daniel and Zach,
you had mentioned after the last one against Mega that lineup with Reed and Sam hadn't repped as much. With having Andre here, how much has that helped them?
Yeah, it's helped us a lot just to have multiple guys that, at the five position, so that from a practice standpoint we can do some more experimental type things, going with a more a bigger lineup at times during practice. And I thought Sam and Reed, we had done just very little of it heading into that, but we wanted to try it in a real game where we could sub people in and out. So I think it's going to be a lineup that's going to help us throughout the year. So we'll continue to work with it and see what we can do. And those are type of things, because it is a different type of lineup that you're trying to get different things on the offensive end, and maybe even a little bit the defensive end. But having that size out there is certainly a good advantage if we can develop enough depth along that front line so that we can play that way.
Zach and Zion.
Coach, on Nick, what was it at Elon that you saw, and then what was it in your conversations with him that made him a guy that you guys wanted to bring in?
Yeah, I think what stands out most is just his shooting. That's what we prioritize. He's got great length. He has ability to get it off, great size from that position. And, he's not bashful. So I love that about him. He's very confident as a shooter. Just an awesome, awesome guy, too. He's so fun to be around, and I can't wait for him to get out on the practice floor where we can kind of see his energy and enthusiasm. So again, we're just looking forward to getting back out there and getting healthy.
Zion and Pete.
Aaron, you altered kind of the preseason festivities for this program with the two events this week and then bringing back Haunted Hall of Hoops at the end of October. Just from your perspective, what was the purpose and goal of kind of going away from the more traditional events and bringing in these new events to engage fans?
Yeah, I think some of it, we brought in a new one, we brought an old event back. I think from our standpoint, it's just we want to make sure that we're a big part of the community, big part of the campus. We want to give as many chances as we can to have those interactions, because I think we have a group that's fun to be around. They're a good group of guys, and we want people to be able to see them on a different level besides just on the basketball floor. So we've tried to get involved in as many community activities as we could, whether it be with youth or adults or whatever it might be, so that they get as many chances to see them on a more personal level.
Pete, then Quinn.
Coach, over here. I know he's a little bit banged up with Josh Harris. What do you expect from him? What can he bring to the team?
Yeah, Josh brings some very good physicality for us. He works incredibly hard. He's another one of those guys that unfortunately is out, so we'll see what that means for him here in the short term. But we really liked his approach every day. He's one of those guys that's in the gym working, and he's trying to develop his game. So again, from an injury standpoint, we'll see how that shakes out here for us for the next foreseeable future.
Yeah, Coach, you mentioned before Puerto Rico being most excited for your team, kind of getting to spend some time off the court with each other. Have you noticed a growth in chemistry since the trip in terms of in and out of practice?
Yeah, I thought the trip was great for us. Tayton and I were teammates, if you will, kayaking. I don't think we're the greatest kayaking team ever. So, but we did those type of things where you got to do some stuff that maybe you aren't in a comfortable position. You're doing things you've never done before. So I thought that was awesome for our team, for our staff, to be able to have that type of interaction, whether it be snorkeling, sand volleyball, jet skiing, all those type of activities were something that I thought was really beneficial for us. You just don't get to do that as often as you might think when you're on campus. You just don't hang out on that type of level. So those type of trips are great for you to get an early start, especially on a team like ours and staff like ours that is essentially all new.
Mike and then Trevor.
Hey, Coach. You've got some guys on this team that were really good players on teams that weren't as good. What goes into recalibrating the way that they're approached and the way they think?
Yeah, I think there's always something that you want to take into account. some of those type of things. But for us, it's like when we're going through the recruiting process, even though some of them are very short, you know, what's important to them. And I think for a lot of these guys, winning was really important to them. They have 1 year left, a lot of them. They want to go out as winners. They want to play in the NCAA tournament. So those are things that, you know, when that's a priority to them, you can tell pretty quickly that that's what they're motivated by. You know, their circumstances from whatever school they were. There's only so much control you have on a team or a roster that you can impact. But I'm excited about the group. Again, I think their approach is right. I think they're motivated by the right things.
Trevor, then Jim.
Yeah, Trent Sisley seems like he's in the mix for major minutes. What's he doing well right now, and what area does he need to kind of step up to get those meaningful minutes in the regular season?
Yeah, I think Trent's doing really well for a freshman coming in. He's you know, from the first week in June till now, he's continued to get better. He's coachable. I think he's becoming more confident in what he's doing and what we want him to do, and intermixing that together. You know, that's always a hard transition coming out of high school. Is like, how do you fit into what the new team's doing? The speed, this, you know, the physicality of the game. But I don't think he has really a lot of problems with that. You know, he's still got some of those growing pains every new college player has. But he's done a great job of continuing to try to work on them and address them. But I like for him for this group is, you know, he's not a guy that has to come out every night. We don't have to, you know, completely rely on him, but he's also, in terms of, like, he doesn't have to get his 20 every night, but he's also a guy that can. So that's what I think is critical for him. It's nice to have the supporting cast he has around him so he can continue to grow and do it at a rate that, you know, I think he can be very comfortable with.
Jim, and then Alex.
Darren, you brought an openness to this program that wasn't there before, and you touched on it a minute ago, but how important is it for you to do that? You've been kind enough to let us in twice, and thank you for that, by the way. It's invaluable. But you were at an event last night, so you're really making an effort to do that. Why is that so important?
Again, I think we're at a place where you know, basketball is incredibly important. Indiana basketball is important to a lot of people. So, you know, I want them to be able to have access to something they really find valuable and important to them. And I think that's what we want. We want people to feel like they're not watching from afar. We want them to feel like they're right on the inside and they're step by, you know, stride by stride with us as we go through it. Because, you know, from a fan standpoint, they have a huge impact on us winning and losing a lot of times. You know, that type of support doesn't happen everywhere. We have it here. You know, we have a night where every time we toss that ball up, this building and our fan base impacts helping us win, and that's critical. So we want them to be a part of it. We want all you to, you know, be a part of it. It's something that I'm sure you love covering, and I'm sure there's times you'll even have advice, you know, and that's but that's okay. That's what people love this game. They love this game here at Indiana, and we do too. And we want to, you know, we want everyone to feel a part of that.
Alex?
Defensively, where do you feel like you guys have made the most strides since you came together as a team, and where do you feel like are one or two areas that you have to continue to make strides as the season comes up very quickly here?
Yeah, what I think always takes a little bit of time in how we play is we don't give them a ton of rules, so there's not a defiant, hey, you're switching this, or a definite, you're switching this or not switching this. So some of it is like, hey, we're trying to be really physical, but if he gets hit, you have to switch. So it takes a while for them to kind of figure out, okay, did he get hit enough, not hit enough for us to switch? And then the communication piece is the second part of it. And a lot of times they're a little hesitant because they're not sure on the call or whatever. But as time goes on, you can see that connectivity starting to really build. And this team, I think, has done a really good job of that. Just like a lot of other teams that, you know, I've coached, is you can see it now. They're becoming more confident in what they're doing. More physical, they can play faster because of that, and that's something, again, that we have to be really good at. We have to be very connected as a defense, and still have the ability to play hard and fast without, you know, slowing them down with a lot of rules. So I like the progress we've made. There's still room, plenty of room to grow there, but they'll continue to work at it. So that's something I think we've come a long way since June. I mean, a lot of you saw it back in June. That I don't think you would have said that maybe back then, that we're I think we've made some strides and still got some work to do for sure.
There's Coach Darren DeVries speaking to us yesterday, and I really love the answer that he gave to me on my question, because it is very apparent that he is making a direct effort to open the program up, to make it more accessible. And he was at an event the other night in Evansville. He opened up practicing for the second time this preseason yesterday. Players were made available to us. He was available to us. You've got the events coming up this weekend, and it's just a nonstop opportunity for fans to engage with that program. And I've got to tell you, it's a breath of fresh air. It is something that we have not seen the likes of. Of course, all that's great, but at the end of the day, people want to see winning on the floor. But I think you're going to see a combination of both of those things. So we'll see. But that's why they play the games. Hey, we've got lots more coming up. Glad to have you along with us here on this beautiful Wednesday. I'm Jim Coyle. We're back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, here on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Just heard from Coach Darren DeVries. We'll hear from maybe Trent Sisley and some other guys a little bit later on, but we've got plenty of time to hear from that, as we won't get to hear from them probably. Well, who knows? With the openness of Coach Darren DeVries. And it's amazing to me, because he looks at it as if, why would it not be open? It's this great thing, and he's right. But we were so, so in tune to it not being that way for so long. So great to see that, by the way, because I know the fans are going to enjoy the heck out of it. And he's right. They have a great product. Why not let the people who love it be around it? Well, not be around it per se, but be closer to it is I guess the best way to put that. But I talked to a number of players yesterday, and amazingly, how many of them, when I asked them about who was the most improved individual, there was three or four guys that said Trent Sisley. Trent's not going to start, but make no mistake, he is going to get a lot of minutes. He is going to be in that first rotation that comes in, along with probably one other player, interior player. But it's the depth that I wonder about with Indiana, because they're good, probably, you know, 1 through 8 maybe, and then you have to worry about with injuries, with fouls and things like that. But we'll see how the how it plays out. That's why they play the games. But very interesting stuff to see them yesterday. And again, more of the same, as just ramped up defense, speed. And I say the same thing over and over. I am looking forward to the matchup with Purdue because of the matchup. And because I know what Purdue has. Reason I speak of Purdue, I don't know exactly what Illinois has. We know what they're bringing in, but we don't know what it's going to be like. What's Michigan State going to be like? We always expect them to be good. UCLA, Michigan seems to be just absolutely loaded and adding talent by the day. Man, man's doing a good job up there in Ann Arbor. But, yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun season, no doubt. I think Indiana fans are going to have the most fun they've had in a long time. I'm serious about that. I think they're going to enjoy the hell out of watching this team play. And that's that. So we'll get to that. And but how many people are heading out? You've got the events coming up, open scrimmage, the event on Kirkwood, which should be unique. So all kinds of things and opportunities for people to get out and see these guys. And it's worth doing. So there's your opportunity. There's your opportunity. Football kind of off this weekend. Well, for Indiana, it's off. Other teams, plenty others will be going on, though, this weekend, as Indiana gets a bye. well, it's actually an off week. It's not a bye. That's what such a word that is ingrained in our head now. But Oregon also off this week as both teams were preparing for this showdown that's coming in Eugene. A week from this Saturday, we'll be out there, of course, to bring you the action and the post-game action from that as well. Plenty of other action going on this weekend, though. You don't have to worry about that, as there always is. We've got baseball going on, and unfortunately, the Reds. Well, what are you going to say? Didn't expect a lot less. They go to Los Angeles and little beat down, but yeah, hopefully they can get things back around. Not quite done yet. Yesterday, quite a few games yesterday. The Tigers, 2-1 over the Guardians after the Tigers gave up the ghost to the Guardians and let them catch them in the division. The Cubs win a playoff game, baby. 3-1 over the Padres. How about the Yankees? The Red Sox beat New York 3-1 in New York, and New York became the first Major League Baseball team ever in a playoff game have what? All right, I'm going to get the stat exactly right. I can't remember if they were trailing or not, but may have been a team trailing. I think it was to be trailing, but have the bases loaded with zero outs and to not score a run. Well, the Yankees now own that distinction. And the Dodgers just knocked the ball all over the park. 15 hits, 10 runs. As they beat the Reds 10-5, ironically, the Reds had the third, fourth most hits of any club yesterday. But unfortunately, they played a team that had the most hits without question as the Reds go down to the Dodgers. The Dodgers. So games coming up today, the Tigers and the Guardians. Playing again. All these teams play again. The Reds are tonight, of course, are out on the West Coast. But the great thing is, we've got games throughout the day. So, not bad. A little fun. NCAA football news. Colorado fined over the fans' anti-Mormon chants. Boy, don't go after those Mormons now. The Big 12 Conference has fined Colorado $50,000. That's lunch money, man. And publicly reprimanded them. Slap them on the hand there, or wrist. Reprimanded the school after a derogatory chant from Buffalo's fans targeted the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. A long word for Mormons. During Saturday's football game against BYU, I should say. Hateful and discriminatory language has no home in the Big 12 Conference, League Commissioner Brett Yormick said. So, Coach Deion Sanders apologized. He probably just should have said, they were high. If it came after the second quarter, because that's their light-up time, apparently. Also, well, you remember I said it was a bad move for Tino Sunseri to go to UCLA? Well, UCLA and offensive coordinator Tino Sunseri have mutually agreed to part ways, the team announced yesterday. Sunseri, in his first season as offensive coordinator after coming over from Indiana, oversaw a unit averaging just 14 points per game. Tight end coach Jerry Neuheisel, a former Bruins quarterback and son of former UCLA coach Rick Neuheisel, will take over offensive play calling duties as UCLA will host number 7 Penn State on Saturday, who is smarting from a loss and will probably take it out on the Bruins. Sunseri is the second Bruins coordinator to exit since the team fired coach Deshaun Foster following their 0-3 start. Defensive coordinator Ikaka Malower and the team decided to part ways shortly after Foster's dismissal. Interim head coach Tim Skipper brought in Kevin Coyle. Hey, I've got a cousin named Kevin Coyle. I don't think it's the same one to call defensive plays, which will continue for the remainder of the season. Sunseri, the son of longtime college and NFL coach Sal Sunseri, was in his first primary coordinator role after sharing duties with Mike Shanahan last year at Indiana. He was the only on-field assistant to leave Indiana staff following the team's run to the college football playoff. He spent most of the spring practice working with transfer quarterback Joey Aguiar, but then pivoted as UCLA added Tennessee's Nico Amalivan, who has started the team's first four games. Yeah, that's not working out well for UCLA, is it? Remember the Amalivan deal where he left and headed to UCLA, and then Joey Aguiar said, well, heck, all right, I'm out. Ended up in Tennessee, and going pretty well for Joey Aguiar and Tennessee. Not so much for I knew that was a bad move. I mean, I get it. You want that job, but you've got to look at the situation, man. That was not a good situation. And you had to know that going in. Mercy. Hey, let's take, we don't have to take one just yet. But, you can't second guess, I guess, people for trying to make moves in their career. I'm not trying to do that, but that particular move was just not a good situation. Nothing about UCLA was a good situation. I mean, that was clear to me. Well, I thought it was clear, at least. From a distance, from afar. The stage was set. I hate to harp on the deal at Big Ten Media Days a year ago, but the stage was kind of set then that, boy, Deshaun Foster was, you know, deer in the headlights. But now, Tino Sunseri is not only he's out of a job, he's not on a staff that is likely to be headed back to the college football playoffs, and if not, damn close. What's next? We'll see. We will see. Penn State coach James Franklin understands the continued focus on his big game struggles, especially in the wake of Saturday's overtime home loss to Oregon. But, man, I do feel bad for him in the regard of losing that game. There is no shame, because I still believe Oregon might be the best team in the country. Does not bode well for Indiana in a week, as they will head out there to play at Autzen Stadium, known as one of the loud places. I wonder why it's so loud, because as far as numbers, it's no different, bigger than Indiana's Memorial Stadium. Now, it is kind of surrounded by hills. I wonder if that helps kind of keep the sound buffered in. They're really good. That helps. Fans are jacked. I would think that the Oregon fans would be, let's say, a little more relaxed heading into the games, if you know what I mean, out there in Oregon. Yeah, but apparently they're not. Looking forward to the environment, I'll tell you, as we'll head out there next week. And because of the flight, I'm going to have to change my plans, not will not be going to Big Ten basketball media days this year, it looks like, because of my travel. And we'll probably have Coach in here coaching or hosting the show next Thursday because of travel. But we'll be back on Friday, or I will be back on Friday to do that, to jump in and handle it. Let's take a break. We've got lots more coming up. Kyle Nedrip's going to join us. Zach Browning was also out at Simon Scott Assembly Hall yesterday. Yeah, I keep forgetting to mention this. Indiana won at Oregon the last time they played, and that was back when Jerry DiNardo was coach. I saw a video, and I was looking. I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's Jerry DiNardo. But imagine that. And Oregon was ranked. So, kind of got something, maybe something, a little something. Who knows? We've got lots more coming up. Glad to have you along. We're back with plenty more after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Kyle Nedrip will be joining us today, as addition to Zach Browning, who was out at Simon Scott Assembly Hall yesterday as well for Indiana's open scrimmage to the media. And it was, again, just great to be able to see all that action that's going on. But it's perfect timing as well. Man, Indiana just knocking it out of the park because of the open week, and doing this during the open week. It's just perfect. So kudos to Indiana, in addition to Darren DeVries and his staff, Drew Adams and Kenny Johnson and Rod Clark and the whole group. You got to also give a shout out to the IU Media Relations Group. Charlie Duffy really doing a great job of helping us get the things we need to get. So appreciate all of those guys for doing that. College football, baby, keeps on rolling. A judge has allowed a Pac-12 lawsuit against the Mountain West to proceed. A federal judge has allowed the Pac-12 conference's lawsuit against the Mountain West conference over $55 million in poaching fees to go forward. My goodness. Northern District of California Senior Judge Claudia Wilkin denied the Mountain West motion to dismiss the case Tuesday, she said in an initial hearing for November 18th. It's actually an initial case management conference. I love that term. We will move forward with our case. The ruling allows our antitrust and related claims to proceed. Hey, man, everybody wants money. The Pac-12 trying to remain alive in name only, with Oregon State and Washington State, as they are brought in a bunch of other teams. Colorado, they should call it the Pac State. Colorado State, Utah State, San Diego State, Fresno State, Boise State are all set to leave the Mountain West and join the Pac-12 beginning next athletic season, 2026. The conference added Texas State. You got to be a state to join the Pac-12, it looks like, in June to reach the 18 minimum to be eligible for an automatic bid for its champion, the college football playoff. Crap. That's crap. Automatic bid my butt just because you have eight teams. You got to be good enough, man. You've got to be good enough. Let's be honest. The best teams are going to come from the SEC and the Big Ten. The Big 12 is going to jump in there. I'm not a fan of just giving it people stuff just to give it to them. Oh, well, we got to give them a little something. No, you don't. Sorry. You don't. But that's my opinion on that. Of course, everybody that's in that other situation feels opposite, and I understand that. It's a tough battle. I get it. It's changed, man. It really has. And there will, I have to think that there's going to come a point to where big time football pulls away, although I don't want to see that necessarily. But at the same time, those teams just can't compete. I mean, hell, it's, you know, seeing Indiana compete on that level now is amazing. And it's even more difficult for those teams to compete at that level. Money-wise, you got to pay these guys. You've got to make the money. You've got to pay the coaches. It is just a different world out there now. And navigating that world is very, very different. Who are the top four quarterbacks right now? ESPN ranking, that is. Jaden Maiva from USC sitting at number one. This is according to ESPN now, again. Total QBR, 93.4. 15, almost 1,600 passing yards. 15 passing touchdowns. Diego Pavia sitting at number two from Vandy. He's got an 88.4 pass QBR, 1,200 passing yards. Maiva's got the most passing yards by far there. 15 passing touchdowns. Mendoza with 18. Trinidad Chambliss, though, sitting at the number three spot with only 7 total touchdowns. How? Just because he's got a QBR of 87.6, he only has 1,000 passing yards. He's got 269 rushing yards. How in the hell do you rank him up there? I'm sorry. I mean, he sticks out like a diamond in a goat's butt amongst these three. Dante Moore. Whoo! Indiana fans are going to get a look at all they want of him from Oregon. This dude is the deal, man. He's got 14 total touchdowns, 1,200 passing yards, and he can run the ball. Number six, how about Brendan Sorsby, the former Hoosier quarterback? Says Cincinnati is basically one poor pass away from being one of the biggest stories of the early season. Sorsby's underthrown interception cost the Bearcats a potential win over Nebraska in week one. He has otherwise piloted what might be the most well-rounded offense this side of USC and Indiana. Congratulations to him. He's ranked ahead of C.J. Carr at Notre Dame, ahead of Ty Simpson at Alabama. Man, ahead of Julian Sayin at Ohio State. Ahead of John Mateer at Oklahoma. And Luke Altmaier way down there at 15th. Joey Aguiar down at 17. Carson Beck, 18. Wow. And see, all right, here's a perfect example. Carson Beck is way down this list. QBR is less than any of them. Half the total TDs. Substantially less passing and rushing yards. Why is he mentioned in the Heisman race? There's only one answer. Because he plays for Miami, who is one of the top teams in the country. It's not because he is killing it. Now, he's not standing out as the elite quarterbacks of the quarterbacks. So that just drives me insane with the Heisman. It's not the best player on the best team. It's supposed to be the best player. So, there's that. That's my little getting on the pulpit for that. But Josh Hoover down at 23. Dylan Raiola, he's way down at 25, man. But the season progresses. Yeah, Indiana. I asked a question on Twitter the other day and got the same response as I expected. I said, hey, with all this, you go into it, is Indiana's game at Oregon the biggest road game in Indiana history now? It's kind of not a trick question, but it's a question that can probably be answered a couple of different ways. A lot of people said the biggest road game ever was last year at Ohio State when Indiana was 10-0 and had a chance and yada, yada. I get that, but they lost that game. So now you move forward, and right now they still have an opportunity to win at Oregon, which would put them on track to potentially play in Indianapolis for a Big Ten title. It would be the biggest road win in the history of the program. No doubt about that. I think it is because of the opportunity that lies ahead. And guess what? If they win that game, that narrative changes to the Penn State game, which, holy smokes, these are going to be two incredible environments, but nothing like what's coming up at Penn State. That is going to be huge because of how important it's going to be to Penn State. They have an easy schedule. Well, I say easy. They play Oregon, Indiana, and Ohio State. They don't play anybody but that. But Indiana is going to be a game that they have to win if they have any hopes of staying in the talks of a Big Ten race. They're already down to Oregon in the tiebreaker there. So they play Ohio State. They have to beat Ohio State or Indiana to have the tiebreaker over one of those. There you go. That's what we're looking at right now. Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, and Indiana in the race for the Big Ten championship. Indiana does not play Ohio State, obviously. So their opportunities are to win at Oregon and Penn State. Both of those are on the road, obviously, so that is going to be a tough road to hoe. Dylan Sin, normally with us on Wednesdays, is on assignment. Couldn't be here. He'll be back. New Life says, I didn't hear Drew Allar's name in that Heisman QB list. Indiana can beat Penn State. Yeah, they can. I think Indiana's biggest. I don't think Indiana's biggest battle at Penn State is going to be on the field. It's going to be between the ears because of the environment and because of what I saw last Saturday in Iowa City. You know, I don't want to get into all that again. But, yeah, that's where I'm seeing. Hey, we've got to take a break. Lots more coming up. Kyle Nenrip is going to join us as the high school season rolls on. We got more coming up from Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after we hit this break. Glad to have you along. Back with more right after this message. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Wednesday. Beautiful day out there, man. Beautiful. The weather has been incredible. We look forward, it's going to stay that way, man. I don't see a single drop of rain, maybe a little bit on Monday, but a little more opportunity for that on Tuesday. But the weather's staying fine as wine, people, fine as wine. Hope your week is going well. Kyle Nenrip from the Indy Star hopefully will be joining us. Until then, the Indiana players met with us yesterday as well and spoke to several of them. Start off with Connor Enright, who will be a starting guard for Indiana. He's going to be, I expect him to be in the starting five. Let's hear what Connor has to say.
For a while.
Yeah.
Right. I think Coach said a few weeks back, he's as healthy now as he's been in 3 years.
Yeah.
Can you kind of see that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. Like, you can see it in his confidence. Like, he doesn't have, you know, a shoulder bug in him or anything. So seeing him at his peak, which I haven't seen for a while, but he's, even when he was hurt, he was still awesome. So it's really, really special, and I know he can be a huge asset to us. He will be a huge asset to us this season.
I know in football we watch each week, there's a growth for these teams and how they get better. Saw you guys in Puerto Rico. What's it been like between then and now? What have you seen with the growth of this team?
I think our connectivity on defense, like our communication is much better, whether it's switching, you know, directing each other. Our ball pressure has been awesome. Just playing offense, honestly, just like playing through each other and not having to call out sets and stuff and slow down has grown too. Just our overall toughness too. Like, I feel like every day we've brought great energy mentally and physically, so I think that's amped up a lot.
What did you get out
of Biden and then Sam down there in the post? And I think they're both really good and play well off of each other.
That's what we were struggling a little bit over there in Puerto Rico, just because we was just new, just not understanding the concepts yet. But now I feel like we got that down pat right now, so we're getting better.
You guys were down in both games, came back to win both of them in different fashion.
Woo, that's kind of loud, isn't it? It's the background noise. Nothing we can do about that, unfortunately. That is how the setup was there. We were in the locker room, and that small space, and it seemed to make it just sound bouncing off the walls there. But you can go to the ISB YouTube channel and hear all of that, plenty on there. Trent Sisley in there as well as many other players: Dayton Conaway, Connor Enright, Tucker DeVries. My favorite, Dayton Conaway. He's always hilarious. I'll have to try to pull him up on here, and we can battle through the background noise a little bit on him. Let's see if we can get to Tayton.
Man, there's been a lot of improvement, man. Shout out that football team too, man. Them some good dudes over there, man. They've hung out with us too. And the Mendoza brothers, man, they took us under their wing and kind of showed us around a little bit. So I definitely appreciate them. But since Puerto Rico, man, we just kind of put our head down. We figured out, like, they pushed us in the mouth a couple of times. So we figured out how we had to fix it and how we had to attack it going in. And so definitely our defenses came a long way.
The last time we got to talk earlier in the first open scrimmage, I asked you who was the best defender on this team, and you didn't bat an eye. What did you say?
Man, I ain't going to lie. I'm going to take that. Connor's close with me, but I'll take that best defender, man. I take pride in that one.
Is that the same still?
Oh, yes, sir. Definitely.
There was Tayton Conaway. Now Kyle Nedenrip joins us from the Indy Star as the high school season rolls on. Getting close to high school basketball too, man. Your duties are about to increase twofold, huh?
Yeah, we just had a meeting yesterday, and I saw that calendar click over to October 1st, and I was like, man, it's starting to get real. October and November are super busy, so but it's good. It's good to be busy.
Hey, the Tigers got a win yesterday as well in the Major League Baseball playoffs, as they can forget about all the other stuff now. It doesn't matter. It's the playoffs, baby. Just win.
Just win. It's good when you got the best pitcher in the world on your team. So that was a fantastic performance. And these games against the Guardians are just like even last year in the playoffs, these games are – you know, they just make your stomach do weird things. And, like, all these games come down to the wire. It's just it'll be the same way probably today. Hopefully. The pitching after Skubal is a little bit shaky. But Casey Mize has been pretty good. And you hope a little bit that Cleveland's feeling some pressure, because it's kind of win or go home. It is win or go home at this point for them anyway.
Absolutely. The high school football season rolls on, man, is getting a little closer to the draw, sectional draws and all of that. In addition, how far from basketball season is that, are we now?
I mean, it's still the actual season of games is not till Thanksgiving, you know, basically before okay. Thanksgiving that week. So we're still a little ways out. Girls basketball comes around a lot quicker than that. But yeah, boys, you know, we're still a ways off. Football draw is actually next Sunday, so that kind of gets you gets you excited for you know, knowing where teams are going and whatnot. So that'll be coming before we know it here in about 10 days. And you know, these last few weeks of the season are, you know, interesting too. There's a lot of really good, you know, I think games that are good barometers this week, you know, like Cathedral and Center Grove, Lawrence North and Warren, which I'll be at that game on Friday. I think that'll be a great game. It's for the MIC championship, and it's and I think a good, you know, kind of a good chance to see where both those teams are right now. It's a game LN has really dominated the last couple of years. It's hard to believe LN's beat Warren four times in a row, which that series was heavily in favor of Warren for years, of course. So that's kind of flipped a little bit. So that's interesting. And I think Warren is better this year, but I would still probably
favor. They were pretty damn good last year.
They were. And LN still got them. And LN was very good. I mean, they were ranked number one in the state. You know, and I thought were probably the team to beat. Brownsburg just got them there by 1 point in the regional, or it's maybe them holding the trophy at the end. But they're still very good. I mean, they, even without Davion Chandler this year, they've got, you know, of course, Sales and Isavion Moore running back. And they got a sophomore quarterback who's really good, Darian Prather. So still a lot of skill position weapons. And, you know, then on the other side, Keon Thomas from Warren, who's, you know, getting a lot of in-state, in, you know, he's been to Purdue as an offer, you know, got some other offers as well. So we'll see. That should be a really fun game, I think, on Friday night.
Yeah, and as we get later in the season and closer to the playoffs, which everybody gets a shot at that now, but teams are starting to come into postseason form, I think. Some of these teams are really looking good, and that's going to make it more exciting yet, although a lot of these games have already been close and exciting, as they have been across the sports landscape, which has been incredible to see. It's touching high school football as well.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to, you know, it's time of year where, yeah, you kind of see what's what, I would say. And, you know, there's a lot of games that, you know, I think once you get past the sectional draw, it's always kind of like, well, let's get to the finish. And we'll only have 1 week left of the regular season after that sectional draw. And then, you know, teams can kind of start seeing what their route looks like, you know, and in some of these, in the bigger classes, you'll have a week off to prepare for that game. You know, they don't play that first week of the tournament. The other classes do, 4A on down, do play. So you could have some really outstanding matchups that first week in some of the lower classes, the smaller classes, but you won't have any games in 5A and 6A just because of the way the tournament is set up. But yeah, I mean, I think some teams that have really, you know, like New Pal, I don't know if anybody's going to touch them this year. I mean, it's just they're 6-0. They're just demolishing everybody. The only teams that are out there are probably the toughest teams are going to be in their sectional, though. They'll have Cathedral and Plainfield. And I saw Plainfield last week. You know, they're a good team. I don't know that they're quite the New Pal's level, but they can create some issues for you for sure. But man, that New Pal team, I mean, very dominant team. I think 4A was interesting last week. Gibson Southern beat, Gibson Southern is actually a 3A team, but they beat Heritage Hills, which had been undefeated. And of course the 3A champion last year. So, you know, that created some, little bit of changes in the state poll this week where, you know, Chittard goes back to number one and Heritage Hills drops down a little bit, but I was, you know, that was an interesting game to result to see. I was a little surprised by that. I thought Heritage Hills would beat Gibson Southern, but really good football down there in that little area of the state there in what had been 3A. Now, you know, with Heritage Hills moving up there in 4A, but still Evansville Memorial in 3A, and those teams kind of have to club each other over the head to get through that sectional in 3A. So that's a tough one to get out of.
Yeah, Gibson Southern, man, they just continue to – they just kind of over there stuck against the state line, kind of away from everybody, but they still keep producing good football teams.
Yeah, it's a great – yeah, if you've been there, man, it feels like you're driving forever to get there. It's a long way out there.
It's because you do. It's as far away as you can get almost.
It's a ways out there. But they do a great job. I mean, Nick Hart has been there for a while. Probably, I mean, I'd have to look it up. He's probably going on 12, 13 years there now, and he's done a great job building that program up. Of course, they had Brady Allen come through there. But just every year, it seems like. And then they come up here and play sometimes in the – I remember they played at Tri-West in the semi-state, and they brought – I mean, there was so many fans here, and it was on a Saturday afternoon, and they had the – they had the campers out there tailgating and you know, cooking up burgers and stuff. It was awesome. So they really support their teams as well. But yeah, they are a juggernaut. I mean, so that tells you a little bit about how good they are this year, if they can beat Heritage Hills, which has, you know, two of the best players in the state and was the 3A champion last year. So, they're used to winning these type of games, but even still, I was a little surprised they won that one.
Then you've got teams up in Fort Wayne and the region, which are always putting out quality programs as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's some, you know, I think the, you know, put out our Super 25 this morning, and, you know, there's a good mix of teams. You know, the region, of course, Crown Point up there, they're 6-0. They haven't really, you know, their schedules, just it's based on where you're at in your conference and whatnot. It's not their fault, but it's hard to gauge, you know, just how good they really are compared to our teams, just because you don't have a comparison of scores in a lot of cases. They did play Pike this year and won that game 21-0, and Pike's pretty good. So that's a good, even though their record's only 1-5, they took Warren to overtime last week. They've got talent. So that was a good win for Crown Point. That gives you a little bit of a barometer, but hard to tell. Merrillville's good too this year. They're a 5A team. They're 4-2, and I think they'll be a factor in their class. Some of the other teams out of our area probably to watch, I would say, are, you know, Bloomington South, which is 6-0 and playing really well. You know, East Central is always good. They're going to be tough again. And they're in 5A actually too this year. Penn, you know, again, Penn, we don't know. I mean, it's hard to know how good they are. They're traditional power, but the schedule's just not what some of these other teams around here are. So they're 6-0, but you it's hard to tell, you know. So, and some of the Southern teams, I think you do know how, you know, Gibsonville Memorial, I think they're really good. I think Gibson Southern, obviously, Heritage Hills, those teams in the smaller classes anyway, I think we have a good barometer just because they have been to the state finals recently, and we kind of have a good gauge on just how good they are. It's just harder in 6A. It's just so dominant by Central Indiana, just not even saying by talent level, but just the overall number of teams, you know, that some of the teams in 6A and elsewhere in the state, they don't play. They play more 4A and 5A just because of where they are. You know, that there's not a lot of 6A teams around them.
Yeah, it makes it difficult to gauge. Just like, you know, I was talking earlier about Big Ten basketball. We had another open practice with Indiana yesterday, and, you know, I get to see them. I know what they have, but Purdue is about the only team in the Big Ten that I know what they have. Michigan got a pretty good idea, but many others today, because of all the changes, you just never know. And it's not the same with high schools because of the multi-transfers. It still takes a minute to get things bore out. I happened to meet in that open practice yesterday. I happened to meet Perry Hunter, the Silver Creek basketball coach, longtime coach, who was there just taking it in, was on a little tour going. He'd been to Indiana State, was at Indiana yesterday, and I think he's up in West Lafayette today just taking in the various things. Obviously, he's got a player at Purdue and Trey Kaufman Wren, but I was surprised not to see a few more coaches there, to be honest with you, but I guess they can go pretty much anytime they want.
Yeah, I think a lot of them go when it's the coaches invite them, or they can come in. But yeah, that Perry's son is a really good player for that Silver Creek team, and they are just talking.
They're loaded, apparently, right?
Yeah, they are. They're 3A, but they can play with anybody, and they play in a lot of these. They play in the Hall of Fame Classic this year, which is before Christmas, actually. It's kind of a weird – it's the 23rd of December, so mark your calendars for that. But they play Crown Point, and then Luke Girdle and Mount Vernon are there as well. So that should be a lot of fun. Crown Point and Silver Creek will be a phenomenal game. Northview is the other fourth team in that. But, yeah, Silver Creek, I had a chance to see them in the summer at the Charlie Hughes, and they were playing – you know, a lot of they didn't have a great weekend by wins and losses, but they you could see they're going to be tough, so that'll be fun to see what they end up doing this year. They just had a kid, Dane Caldwell, just committed to Richmond, so they've got obviously Division I talent on that team, and and coming off a really good year last year. They lost to Brownstown in the sectional championship game, but they were a really good team, and they returned basically everybody. So it'll be fun. Starting to get in that basketball mode, and looking forward to seeing them play this year, probably several times.
And also, Luke Ertl, will he come into the season as the Mr. Basketball favorite?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't think there's any.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt in your mind there, man. Which I'm not surprised, because I was trying to think of who else is even close to him.
I mean, I don't think anybody is. I mean, it's one of the – and Mullins was probably this way, too, last year. But, you know, we've had a couple of years here where it's been pretty obvious, I would say. So it's almost like something would have to happen, you know. Someone would really have to go crazy. And there's guys out there, I think, like Noah Smith at Plainfield is a really good player. Justin Curry and Baron Walker at Noblesville are really good players. Dikembe Shaw is, I think Shaw might be the one, you know, because of the Crown Point success that they've had. But, and I think they're a team that, you know, potentially could challenge Mount Vernon, and maybe win a state championship even. He's a guy I think maybe you look at and really like his opportunity, team success, individual success. You know, he's going to Illinois Chicago, which is not a super powerful, when you think of Mr. Basketball necessarily. But Ertl, man, it's hard to think based on what he did last year and just everything else, all the numbers he's put up and basically the run he had at the end of last year, I think just kind of makes you think like it's going to be hard to knock him off.
Yeah, he has shown to be just a super, super talent and continues the efforts of Matt Painter to own the state of Indiana in basketball recruiting right now. Will that change soon with Indiana and Darren DeVries? You know, Darren DeVries has, and I talked about this earlier before you joined us, Kyle, he has really made an effort to open up the program, the Indiana basketball program, to the media, to the fans. And yesterday we had our second open practice for media this preseason, the second one. That's two more than I know of in over a decade or more. And they've got multiple public events coming up with a scrimmage at Simon Scott Assembly Hall. You've got an event down on Kirkwood Avenue in Bloomington. So he is really making an effort. And I asked him about that in a presser, and he talked about that, hey, this is, you know, it's a great product. It's a great thing, and the people love it. And why not be able to be around it, which is unbelievably refreshing to hear, but quite different, as you know, than for what we're accustomed to.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's fantastic. I mean, I think the more, you know, people can feel like they're a part of it, to an extent, obviously you don't want, you don't want all access all the time, I don't think, but, you know, IU fans, I mean, they want to feel like they know the coach. They want to feel like they have an open door to a certain extent. You know, they want to be involved. And I think that's a great thing. If you can kind of ride that momentum and allow them, you know, to have some access here and there. And I think that's and access to him, you know, being, I think we've talked about that before with Painter. It's like Painter will just go to a game and sit there and people just come up, yeah, they'll just come up and talk to him, and he seems to have no problem with that. So he's a regular guy. I think, you know, that sort of thing, you know, not just here in Indiana, it's like everywhere. If you have a fan base that wants to be a part of it, you know, you allow them some access, that means, you know, just sitting down and talking to people and being genuine. And I think that's the thing about Painter, is they just feel like he's a genuine guy. And I think that can
be a great, and he is.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely is. He's done that. He's sat there and talked to me at games before. So those are cool things where I think there's some real good momentum on that side. You know, you haven't even played a game yet, but I think for IU, that's can be, and I think it's genuine from him too. So I think that's a good thing, and I think that will play well with the fan base. And obviously, everything else goes into it is more, you know, you got to win, you got to do those things. But But I think that buys you some, where maybe previous coaches, you know, it maybe gets you out the door a little faster just because you didn't have that relationship. I honestly think that's, you know, part of what's been the problem. You know, there's no grace period because you're just not connected to the program maybe. So I think that can help you in the long run. Doesn't mean everything, but it means something, I think.
Absolutely. And neither of the last two Indiana basketball coaches had what I would consider great relationships with Indiana high school coaches around the state. It just wasn't the relationship there. And that's not the same for Matt Painter. He does have that. And, you know, like you said, if you can see him at a game sitting in the stands eating popcorn. He doesn't make a big deal out of showing up to watch a kid. He doesn't have to be center stage and all of that. He just takes it in, and that's been his – and it's worked very well.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't – and there's a lot of games I'm like, oh, I see him in the third, fourth quarter. Like, I didn't even know he's here, you know, and he's just sitting up there. You know, it's like – so, but, yeah, I mean, that's a – you know, that's something that, you know, when he retires and, you know, goes on and does whatever he does. I mean, I think that's something people always talk about with him. It's like, he's just kind of like that kind of guy that he just will talk basketball. And, you know, I was around him in the Final Four that several days out in Arizona, and, you know, just being around the program. And I mean, he's just that way all the time. You know, it's just kind of, and he loves to talk basketball. So I think that's something people enjoy. I don't know if DeVries is fully, you know, that he seems a little bit more, I don't know. I mean, some personalities are different for sure, but I think he's of the same mold. You know, I do think that. So I think that'll be what, well received from the IU fan base. I'm happy for them. I think they've got a guy that they're really going to like.
Well, I'm happy for the state. I mean, just to see both programs being at the top of college basketball is just good. Good for the state, good for both programs, and good for high schools as well, because there is still recruiting is still a very important part of what goes on. What's next for you, my friend?
I've got a story coming tomorrow on a running back who leads the nation in rushing, and he's from a Indiana town that maybe people don't know who he is or, you know, what the deal is, but looking forward to that running tomorrow. Got a few other things, our normal stuff, but I got that done yesterday, so that should be out tomorrow. Then our, like I said, kind of our normal stuff, getting ready for next week for the sectional draw, and then we'll have a lot more to talk about at that point.
It keeps coming, man. Kyle Nedrip, make sure you're giving him a follow and keeping up with all of his content at the Indy Star. Appreciate you, sir.
You bet. Thanks, Jim.
Appreciate you, sir. Hey, we've got lots more coming up here on Indiana Sports Speed Radio. Zach Browning will join us a little later. He was at the open scrimmage yesterday at Indiana as well. We'll talk more about that. And plenty more to get to after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Speed Radio, on this Wednesday. So glad to have you along. Jim Coyle with you as always. Zach Browning will join us in a little while. As the week has hit the midway point and it's all downhill from here. Open weekend for Indiana football. So no tailgating, no travel for fans. There is the Indiana basketball event that goes on Friday, though. Is there one Thursday and Friday this week? There's so much going on, it's confusing. But the Kirkwood event coming up, open scrimmage coming up, lots of access for fans to get to see that team before the season gets underway, which is not all that far away as far as official practice starting. So it's here, man, and the football season just really getting ramped up. As what week are we heading into? Week six of the college football season, and it's been a fun one so far, without question. I've enjoyed it immensely. We've got more great games that are coming up across the conferences. Who's going to turn out from the SEC to be the best team in the SEC? I still don't know. Is it Ole Miss? who is sitting up there now, it's hard to say. I have really not seen a team that has stood out enough yet from the SEC for me to know. And that's good, because I don't want there to be teams that stand out that much. I want there to be four teams at least in a conference that are at the top or more. Big Ten currently has that with Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, Indiana. I'm not saying that all four of those teams are better than SEC teams. I'm not saying that at all, but there, at least we have some definition in the Big Ten. Georgia lost to Alabama. Alabama lost to Florida State. Is Ole Miss undefeated? I can't remember. I know that they've won. They beat Arkansas at home, and they just beat LSU at home. So it may be Ole Miss at the moment who is standing kind of head and shoulders above the rest of their brethren. If we looked into conference standings right now, which it doesn't mean a lot, although the Ole Miss Rebels are 3-0 in conference play, they're the only school that's played three games in the SEC conference already. That means they're going to have some easy cream puffs come along on their schedule yet to go. But overall, they're 5-0, as are the Missouri Tigers. Missouri, that's a team that I talked about yesterday. Maybe better than we think. I remember looking at the top 25, and somebody had them voted very, very high. And I'm like, what is wrong with this guy? The more I looked at it, Missouri, very high in the NCAA statistics in football. As a matter of fact, on both sides of the ball, very similar to Indiana, but maybe a little higher. They are, I think, number one in total defense, if I am remembering correctly, which I'll have to check that to be sure. But they're very high on both sides of the ball. And Missouri may be a team that's being overlooked because of what's on their jersey. Missouri, they're ranked 19th. They're behind Vanderbilt. Way behind Oklahoma, behind Texas A&M, behind Alabama, behind Georgia, behind LSU, and behind Tennessee. Tennessee has one loss, that being to Georgia. LSU is 1-1. They lost to Ole Miss. Georgia lost to Alabama already. Alabama undefeated in their conference, but 3-1 overall. The Big Ten, of course. Indiana and Oregon are the only two teams in the Big Ten that are 2-0. Now, USC has already played three conference games, and they're 2-1. But Indiana and Oregon playing for the Big Ten lead next week. Well, that's, I guess, not quite true because, well, yeah, it will be. If one of those teams goes to 3-0, they'll be in the conference lead. The Hoosiers and the Ducks both 5-0. Man, what a showdown that's going to be. The Maryland Terrapins, I am very, very surprised at, and you got to give a shout out to Mike Locksley. I've talked about this. They lost their quarterback to Maryland, they lost their quarterback to Wisconsin, who in turn lost him to injury. He may be able to return, though. They lost their running back, Roman Hemby, to Indiana, and yet they're playing better this year than they did last year. That's a pretty damn good job. The Trojans, I thought that they were better than they might be. I don't know. They go into Illinois last week and lose, but of course, Illinois was smarting from that absolute destruction of a game they faced against Indiana. The Ohio State Buckeyes, number one in the country, 4-0 on the season so far. one, two, three, four, five, six teams in the Big Ten that are ranked. It's going to be interesting to see how this season plays out. Who wins the Big Ten? I mean, I know that Indiana fans are going to say, Indiana. Well, that's great for confidence, but Ohio State, I just don't see them not making the Big Ten championship game, number one. And on the other side of that, it's likely going to be the winner of this Indiana-Oregon game. Well, if Oregon wins, very likely, since they have already notched a win over Penn State, Indiana can muck up the waters a little bit if they split those. We'll have to see. But they can not worry about it if they can somehow go out to Eugene and pull off the win that nobody thinks that they can get. Vegas has them a 10.5-point underdog right now. Double-digit underdog. A top 10 team. Now, we saw that last year when Indiana traveled to Ohio State. About the same thing. This is a different team. But is Oregon, at Oregon right now, better than Ohio State was than at Ohio State last year? Because after the Indiana game, the Buckeyes would lose to the Michigan Wolverines, who Indiana had beaten already that season. It's why they play the games, according to Herm Edwards. I wish I had that clip up where I could pull it up. I thought I did, but I guess not. Hey, it's just fun, though, is it not? Have these games not just been enjoyable as heck? They have, and it continues to roll on. Indiana has to. They don't have to win at Oregon to gain a little more respect, but they have to compete. They have to be in the game. They have to have a shot at winning. You can't go out there and get beat by two touchdowns. Because if you do, then people are going to view them as a second-tier CFP team. And by second tier, I mean not hosting a home game, not in that top eight. And that's what's going to be left in their mind. Now, they'll have a chance to revisit that for people when they go to Penn State. But I can see it now. If Indiana were to go to Happy Valley, come out of there with the win, well, that's because James Franklin can't beat ranked teams. Well, that would be crap, to be honest with you, because that is still, I mean, that Oregon win, unbelievable. Just, they did it against all those odds. Wow, that's a huge win. That crowd was jacked. Crowds just get jacked for these big games. If you don't believe me, look at what was going on at Memorial Stadium when Indiana hosted Illinois. Never has that stadium ever rocked like it did on that Saturday. It was unbelievable. They could probably hear that noise up to Indianapolis. And you know that sound reverberates through the hills over there in Happy Valley. Can Indiana shock the world, really? It's not about being negative to this Indiana football team, but this is a tough ask. I really am wondering, is Oregon the top team in the country? If they're not, I don't know that there is a number one team, to be honest with you. How can you say the best team until they play each other? And that always doesn't actually determine it. Sometimes it just determines who's the best on that day. But there's no doubt Oregon is absolutely one of the I think top two teams in the country. Ohio State is one of the top two teams in the country. And I think that then you take a step down. And I don't know where that first step goes to. I really don't. Who is the third best team in the country, really? It's interesting. We've got to take a break. When we come back, Zach Browning will join us. He was out at Simon Scott Assembly Hall yesterday as well for the IU men's basketball scrimmage. We'll talk about that and a little info on recruiting as well. Glad to have you with us. Hope you're with us on the other side. We're back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along, no matter where or how you're listening. Zach Browning from thehoosier.com joins us now. Zach was out at Simon Scott Assembly Hall yesterday as well for the open scrimmage for IU basketball and the pre and subsequent meetings with players and with Coach Darren DeVries. And first of all, what were your thoughts between what you saw on the highlight from Puerto Rico and our first open scrimmage to now, Zach?
You know, you've seen improvement. You've seen the team come together. You've seen the team go from a bunch of different guys that were at different places last year and were talented where they were and were great where they were, but now they're having to learn to become a team here and become part of a puzzle. I think that's the most interesting part about this Indiana roster is that you have the SoCon Player of the Year. You have a guy in Lamar Wilkerson that scored 20 points per game, another alpha in Tucker DeVries. There's a lot of guys that were the leading scorer or one of the leading scorers at their previous schools, one of the top dogs there. And now they're coming here, and it's you got to figure out your role. This is a little bit of a different opportunity where Indiana isn't looking for all of these guys to score 20, 30 points a night. They're looking for these guys to fill a role. Sometimes you'll want a guy like Lamar Wilkerson to go for 25, 30, but there's some nights where Lamar Wilkerson will maybe have to take a backseat to Tucker DeVries scoring the basketball. So I think that's probably the biggest thing I've seen is guys figuring out their roles and really coming together more.
Yeah, I agree. I think Lamar is going to be ultimately the leading scorer for this team. But I also agree that it's not going to be the same guy leading the team every night, and it's not going to be just those two guys. There's going to be a night, depending upon the matchup, on who just goes off, who has a great game, because all of these guys can shoot the ball. That's one thing that fans are going to see. I said this to some people yesterday. This team is going to break probably a ton of Indiana three-point shooting records, and I mean by attempts, maybe multiple times this season, because that is a major part of what their offense is going to be. But it's not the only thing. This is not a team that's coming down the floor just to put up three-point shots. It's just a big part of their arsenal.
And another thing that stood out to me yesterday was the ball movement and the player movement. When Indiana was doing their half-court five-on-five work against each other, the inter-squad stuff, there was two separate periods in which one period they weren't allowed to set ball screens, which was telling to me you have to move the ball without being able to set a ball screen. A lot of teams just rely on ball screens. It's kind of like a crutch for a lot of people. If there's not much to do on the court, you just go set a ball screen and something will happen. So I found it interesting and good that Indiana had to go 10 minutes in a five-on-five setting without setting any ball screens. That was interesting. And there was another setting in five-on-five where Indiana had to make three different passes across the court, like different sides of the court, switch from the left side to the right side, from the right side back to the left side three different times, which I think was telling us, well, there's a heavy, heavy emphasis on ball movement. It's not just shooting. It's ball movement. If a layup is there because of the ball movement that's created, a layup will be taken. If it's a floater in the lane, any open shot that is gotten will be taken. It's not just a heavy emphasis on threes. It's a heavy emphasis on ball movement, a heavy emphasis on player movement. And I think that not only will the three-point shot be a big breath of fresh air for Indiana fans compared to the last couple of years for Indiana, but just the ball movement and the player movement, I think, will be a big breath of fresh air. There will be a lot more movement, a lot more actions, a lot more off-ball screens, a lot more just everything that we haven't really seen in the last couple of years.
Yeah, and it gets everybody involved in moving the ball, not just the guards, not just Tayton Conaway and Connor Enright and those types. It's everybody that is moving and being a part of that. And that's part of what's going to make this offense more difficult, and it has to, because they have limitations. They don't have the length that some other teams are going to have. So their attack will be different and force them to try to keep up with what Indiana's doing. And everything they did was at warp speed yesterday as well.
It really did. And Kurt Cignetti's talked about it for the last 2 years about how his kind of practices are shorter, but hard, fast. You get stuff done, but it's physical, it's aggressive, it's quick, it's demanding. And I think that's what we've seen from Darren DeVries so far from the few practices that we've been able to see. They're not going to be out there for practice for two and a half hours. I think 90 minutes yesterday is probably the longest they're really ever going to go out of practice, but it was nonstop movement. It was two on two into full court transition defense work, into five on five, into a minute of rest, into more five on five. It was just, everything was quick, everything was rapid, everything was keeping up and keeping going, and it really simulates how it will be in a Big Ten game. It's 40 minutes in a Big Ten game. You get halftime, yeah, but then it's a second half, two 20-minute halves. You've got 20 Big Ten games. It's a long, grueling schedule. You have to be well-conditioned for that, and I think these types of practices really set Indiana up for a longer, grueling Big Ten season, especially with the depth that you need to have and the amount of players you need to have and be able to step up in those kind of moments in a Big Ten schedule, in a Big Ten season, because you do have to be a deep team. You can't just rely on six, seven, eight guys to get you through a Big Ten season.
And with that in mind, I've talked about how this team is going to be, I think fans are going to really enjoy watching this team play because of how hard they play, of the defense, the level of defense they're going to play, the fact that the ball is going to move so much and so quickly, the three-point shots will fly. But Russell asking, is it possible the basketball team is fun to watch, but yet still finishes with a worse record than Mike Woodson's team did last year? Everything's possible, but I don't think so. I think that this team has something that team didn't have. That team couldn't finish. That team made really some really bungling mistakes at bad times with lack of communication of who was doing what. I don't think that that's the case here. Darren DeVries, and watching him run his practices, he stops practice immediately if something is not done correctly and redoes it. Not to say that they're not going to lose games. They are. Of course they are. I'm thinking that they're going to finish somewhere between 6th and 10th, but I don't know what's going to happen. So to answer that question, yeah, anything's possible, but I don't think so personally. I think they're going to beat some teams that people don't expect them to beat, to be honest with you.
And I think that's an interesting question to pose to fans. Would they be happy with a season that record-wise is worse? Maybe you missed the NCAA tournament, but they're just enjoyable to watch, and they put up 20 threes a game, and they are one of the best three-point
shooters. Let me answer that question for you right now. No. Winning is what matters, baby.
Yes, but it's year one. And I think Indiana fans have to – they can't fall into the trap of football where Kurt Cignetti did something that really nobody ever does in any sport. You can't – year one turnarounds like what Kurt Cignetti did are historically very improbable. So
absolutely.
I think there's maybe definitely unfairly, maybe some added pressure on Darren DeVries to deliver an NCAA tournament appearance in year one because of what Chris Nettie did. And I just don't think that's yes, you see what a program like Louisville has done the last couple of years with Pat Kelsey. You see what Mark Pope has been able to do at Kentucky. Yes, you can get into the tournament. You can be competitive. But it's unfair to really expect this Indiana team to be super good in year one. I think they will be fun to watch. I think it'll be more enjoyable basketball. I don't think this will be a situation where Indiana is sleepwalking through home games in January and things like that. But I get concerned a little bit when I hear people thinking, oh, Indiana has to make the tournament or it's a failure of the year, because that's unfair expectations to place on a guy, a first-year head coach, a guy that is going to be in his second year ever coaching power conference basketball at the collegiate level. So I think expectations probably need to be tempered a little bit. But I do think this team will be much, 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 much more fun to watch this season.
Yeah, and Cignetti, Darren DeVries was asked that question yesterday. What would be mean success to him? And do you remember what his thoughts were?
He basically said something along just the process of continuing to establish a culture and the process. Yes, an NCAA tournament. And I think he went off on a little bit of a tangent in the fact that he has guys on this team that many of them are in their last year. You look at a Tucker DeVries, a Lamar Wilkerson, Tayton Conroway, pretty much the entire starting lineup is in their last season of college eligibility. So there's that little extra chip on their shoulder. This is their last go around. Many of these guys have never played in the NCAA tournament. Many of these guys have maybe made the tournament and lost in the first round, or were a 14 seed like Troy was a few years ago and got destroyed by a Kentucky team. So I think that kind of thing is something that DeVries brought up, and the fact that the expectations internally are to make the NCAA tournament because there's not many guys that have done that on this roster.
Yeah, specifically, he said, yeah, I think that this, even from our press conference, it's not really about wins and losses. I think the success coming from what we are doing, what we feel like we need to do every day from a mindset, from an approach, are we getting to where we want them to get to from that standpoint? Everything they value, whether it be in practice or on the floor, off the floor, are they doing those things? Which is basically all he can say, because otherwise he puts a big bullseye on his and the team's back, which is not fair. And I agree with you in that regard, but pressure is part of the deal, and that's what we do because people want to win, man. And it's going to be interesting to see. I think they, like I said, I think they beat some teams that they are not supposed to beat. I don't think they lose many games that they're not supposed to lose because of how hard they're working at being what they're doing. They're not trying to be something they're not, which is very, very important. They're playing within the confines of what they have, and if you can do that successfully day in, day out, you have a lot better chance at success.
I could see Indiana being one of these highly variable teams this year because of that three-point shot. The defense, I still am interested to see the defense once the season starts. I think the Baylor exhibition might not be too great of a indicator, but that Marquette game, I'm interested to see how the defense fares. But when you look at the three-point shot, I think the three-point shot, if there's nights where Indiana can just shoot 40% from three and make 15 threes, there's not really many teams in the country that can stop you and beat you when you make 15 threes and shoot 40%. So I think Indiana's going to surprise some teams, win some games, as you mentioned, that they shouldn't if they shoot well from three. But there's also going to be some games where if you're going to live by the three and shoot a lot of threes, there's also going to be some games where the shot just doesn't fall and you're shooting 20% on 30-plus attempts, and then it's difficult to win those types of games against quality opponents, especially in conference play, if you're shooting poorly from deep. So I think there will be some games for sure where Indiana beats teams they aren't supposed to beat because of that three-point shot, and then there will be some games where Indiana either gets blown out or is not really as competitive or loses the game. Maybe they were favored and or should have won just because that three-point shot isn't falling on any given night. But I do think Indiana will be a tough team to beat at home this year, which I think is important in the Big Ten season.
We shall see. Zach Browning with the Hoosier.com. Make sure you are a subscriber. You're missing out. If not, there are tons of updates there right now regarding Indiana basketball recruiting. Some information that you'll want to know. Zach, appreciate you.
Thanks for having me, all as always, Jim.
Thank you, sir. Hey, that's going to wrap it up for us today from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. We're back tomorrow to do it again. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.